his dream, the oracle had been consulted twice. But the text of the chapter, Youthful Folly, expressly forbids the putting of a second question. For two nights, Henry had tossed sleeplessly in bed, but on the third, a luminous dream image of great power had suddenly appeared before his eyes, a helmet with a sword floating in empty space. Henry immediately took up the I Ching again and opened it at random to a commentary on chapter 30, where, to his great surprise, he read the following passage. The clinging is fire. It means coats of mail, helmets. It means lances and weapons. Now he felt that he understood why a second intentional consulting of the oracle was forbidden. For in his dream, the ego was excluded from the second question. It was the trapper who had to consult the oracle the second time. In the same way, it was Henry's semi-unconscious action that had unintentionally asked the second question of the I Ching by opening the book at random and coming upon a symbol that coincided with his nocturnal vision. Note, concerning a second consulting of the I Ching, Jung writes in his Introduction to the English Edition, page Roman numeral 10, a repetition of the experiment is impossible for the simple reason that the original situation cannot be reconstructed. Therefore, in each instance, there is only a first and single answer. End of note. Henry was clearly so deeply stirred that it seemed time to try to interpret the dream that had sparked the transformation. In view of the events of the dream, it was obvious that the dream elements should be interpreted as contents of Henry's inner personality, and the six dream figures as personification of his psychic qualities. Such dreams are relatively rare, but when they do occur, their after effects are all the more powerful. That is why they could be called dreams of transformation. With dreams of such pictorial power, the dreamer seldom has more than a few personal associations. All Henry could offer was that he had recently tried for a job in Chile and had been refused because they would not employ unmarried men. He also knew that some Chinese let the nails of their left hand grow as a sign that instead of working, they have given themselves over to meditation. Henry's failure to get a job in South America was presented to him in the dream. In it, he is transported into a hot southern world, a world that, in contrast to Europe, he would call primitive, uninhibited, and sensual. It represents an excellent symbolic picture of the realm of the unconscious. This realm was the opposite of the cultivated intellect and Swiss Puritanism that ruled Henry's conscious mind. It was, in fact, his natural shadow land for which he had longed, but after a while he did not seem to feel too comfortable there. From the thonic dark maternal powers, symbolized by South America, he is drawn back in the dream to the light personal mother and to his fiancée. He suddenly realizes how far he has gone away from them. He finds himself alone in a foreign city. This increase in consciousness is symbolized in the dream as a higher level. The city was built on a mountain. So Henry climbed up to a greater consciousness in the shadow land. From there he hoped to find his way home. This problem of ascending a mountain had already been put to him in his initial dream. And, as in the dream of the saint and the prostitute, or in many mythological tales, a mountain often symbolizes a place of revelation, where transformation and change may take place. The city on the mountain is also a well-known archetypal symbol that appears in the history of our culture in many variations. The city, corresponding in its ground plan to a mandala, represents that region of the soul in the middle of which the self, the psyche's innermost center and totality, has its abode. Surprisingly, the seat of the self is represented in Henry's dream as a traffic center of the human collective, a railway station. This may be because the self, if the dreamer is young and has a relatively low level of spiritual development, is usually symbolized by an object from the realm of his personal experience, often a banal object, which compensates the dreamer's high aspirations. Only in the mature person, acquainted with the images of his soul, is the self realized in a symbol that corresponds to its unique value. Even though Henry does not actually know where the station is, he nevertheless supposes it to be in the center of the city, on its highest point. Here, as in earlier dreams, he receives help from his unconscious. Henry's conscious mind was identified with his profession as an engineer, so he would also like his inner world to relate to rational products of civilization, like a railway station. The dream, however, rejects this attitude and indicates a completely different way. The way leads under and through a dark arch. An arched gateway is also a symbol for a threshold, a place where dangers lurk, a place that at the same time separates and unites. Instead of the railway station that Henry was looking for, which was to connect uncivilized South America with Europe, Henry finds himself before a dark arched gateway where four ragged Chinese, stretched on the ground, block the passage. The dream makes no distinction between them, so they may be seen as four still undifferentiated aspects of a male totality. The number four, a symbol of wholeness and completeness, represents an archetype that Dr. Jung has discussed at length in his writings. The Chinese thus represent unconscious male psychic parts of Henry that he cannot pass. Because the way to the self, that is, to the psychic center, is barred by them and must still be opened to him. Until this issue has been settled, he cannot continue his journey. Still unaware of the impending danger, Henry hurries to the gateway, expecting at last to reach the station. But on his way, he meets his shadow, his unlived primitive side, which appears in the guise of an earthy, rough trapper. The appearance of this figure probably means that Henry's introverted ego has been joined by his extroverted compensatory side, which represents his repressed emotional and irrational traits. This shadow figure pushes itself past the conscious ego into the foreground, and because it personifies the activity and autonomy of unconscious qualities, it becomes the proper carrier of fate through whom everything happens. The dream moves toward its climax. During the fight between Henry, the trapper, and the four ragged Chinese, Henry's left leg is scratched by the long nails on the left foot of one of the four. Here, it seems, the European character of Henry's conscious ego has collided with a personification of the ancient wisdom of the East, with the extreme opposite of his ego. The Chinese come from an entirely different psychic continent, from an other side that is still quite unknown to Henry and that seems dangerous to him. The Chinese can also be said to stand for the yellow earth, for the Chinese people are related to the earth as few people are, and it is just this earthy thonic quality that Henry had to accept. The unconscious male totality of his psyche, which he met in his dream, had a thonic material aspect that his intellectual conscious side lacked. Thus, the fact that he recognized the four ragged figures as Chinese shows that Henry had gained an increase of inner awareness concerning the nature of his adversaries. Henry had heard that the Chinese sometimes let the nails of their left hand grow long, but in the dream the long nails are on the left foot. They are, so to speak, claws. This may indicate that the Chinese have a point of view so different from Henry's that it injures him. As we know, Henry's conscious attitude toward the thonic and feminine, toward the material depths of his nature, was most uncertain and ambivalent. This attitude, symbolized by his left leg, the point of view or standpoint of his feminine unconscious side, of which he is still afraid, was harmed by the Chinese. This injury, however, did not itself bring about a change in Henry. Every transformation demands, as its precondition, the ending of a world, the collapse of an old philosophy of life. As Dr. Henderson has pointed out earlier in this book, at ceremonies of initiation, a youth must suffer a symbolic death before he can be reborn as a man and be taken into the tribe as a full member. Thus, the scientific, logical attitude of the engineer must collapse to make room for a new attitude. In the psyche of an engineer, everything irrational may be repressed and therefore often reveals itself in the dramatic paradoxes of the dream world. Thus, the irrational appeared in Henry's dream as an oracle game of foreign origin with a fearful and inexplicable power to decide human destinies. Henry's rational ego had no alternative but to surrender unconditionally in a real sacrificium intellectus. Yet the conscious mind of such an inexperienced, immature person as Henry is not sufficiently prepared for such an act. He loses the turn of fortune, and his life is forfeit. He is caught, unable to go on in his accustomed way or to return home, to escape his adult responsibilities. It was this insight for which Henry had to be prepared by this great dream. Next, Henry's conscious, civilized ego is bound and put aside, while the primitive trapper is allowed to take his place and to consult the oracle. Henry's life depends on the result, but when the ego is imprisoned in isolation, those contents of the unconscious that are personified in the shadow figure may bring help and solution. This becomes possible when one recognizes the existence of such contents and has experienced their power. They can then become our consciously accepted constant companions. Because the trapper, his shadow, wins the game in his place, Henry is saved. Facing the irrational. Henry's subsequent behavior clearly showed that the dream, and the fact that his dreams and the oracle book of the I Ching had brought him to face deep and irrational powers within himself, had a very deep effect on him. From then on, he listened eagerly to the communications of his unconscious, and the analysis took on a more and more agitated character. The tension that until then had threatened the depths of his psyche with disruption came to the surface. Nevertheless, he courageously held to the growing hope that a satisfactory conclusion would be reached. Barely 2 weeks after the oracle dream, but before it was discussed and interpreted, Henry had another dream in which he was once again confronted with the disturbing problem of the irrational. Alone in my room, a lot of disgusting black beetles crawl out of a hole and spread out over my drawing table. I try to drive them back into their hole by means of some sort of magic. I am successful in this, except for 4 or 5 beetles, which leave my table again and spread out into the whole room. I give up the idea of following them further. They are no longer so disgusting to me. I set fire to the hiding place. A tall column of flame rises up. I fear my room might catch fire, but this fear is unfounded. By this time, Henry had become relatively skillful in the interpretation of his dreams, so he tried to give this dream an explanation of his own. He said, "The beetles are my dark qualities. They were awakened by the analysis and come up now to the surface. There is a danger that they may overflow my professional work, symbolized by the drawing table. Yet I did not dare to crush the beetles, which reminded me of a kind of black scarab, with my hand as I first intended, and therefore had to use magic. In setting fire to their hiding place, I, so to speak, call for the collaboration of something divine, as the upshooting column of flame makes me think of the fire that I associate with the Ark of the Covenant." To go deeper into the symbolism of the dream, we must first of all note that these beetles are black, which is the color of darkness, depression, and death. In the dream, Henry is alone in his room, a situation that can lead to introversion and corresponding states of gloom. In mythology, scarab beetles often appear golden. In Egypt, they were sacred animals, symbolizing the sun. But if they are black, they symbolize the opposite side of the sun, something devilish. Therefore, Henry's instinct is quite correct in wanting to fight the beetles with magic. Though 4 or 5 of the beetles remain alive, the decrease in the number of beetles is enough to free Henry from his fear and disgust. He then tries to destroy their breeding ground by fire. This is a positive action because fire can symbolically lead to transformation and rebirth, as for instance it does in the ancient myth of the phoenix. In his waking life, Henry now seemed full of enterprising spirit, but apparently he had not yet learned to use it to the right effect. Therefore, I want to consider another later dream that throws an even clearer light on his problem. End of side 9. To continue, turn the cassette over.